Hey kids, Jeff Hawkins from Shake Them Ropes here, and for almost 15 years we have been part of Voices of Wrestling. Myself and Chris Novembrino give a review of that week's news, the lazy river of wrestling criticism of that week's WWE and AEW, and then Vader Club, where we watch something from one of our past, or something we may have missed. Smart, snarky, and sometimes serious, but not always. That's us, and if that's your vibe, we'd love to have you listen to Shake Them Ropes every week on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
You like pro wrestling? We like pro wrestling too. This week in the news, WWE PLEs to ESPN, the lazy river of wrestling criticism, SummerSlam, Brock, all that. No Vader Club this week. We'll probably have a lot to talk about on other things, so no time for that. I am Jeff Hawkins.
We got a little bit of a time crunch this week.
Yeah, he is Chris Novembrino. Music-wise, I recommended this to Chris. Go watch the Billy Joel documentary. It's fascinating.
Everything I've seen clips-wise looks awesome. It seems like a really quality watch for anyone who's interested in that sort of topic.
A lifetime of daddy issues, let's put it that way. But his classical background, I had no idea about. So that's why he's like he is. But there's a lot of wrestling to talk about, so let's get to it. Top story, WWE PLEs are going to ESPN. ESPN has secured a five-year deal with WWE to exclusively stream all WWE premium live events in the United States starting in 2026 with WrestleMania. The agreement, valued at $1.6 billion, grants ESPN rights to major events such as WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, and Survivor Series. This deal will integrate the events into ESPN's new direct-to-customer streaming service with select simulcasts on linear networks. Quote, anyone who pays for a bundle of TV networks that includes ESPN will eventually get ESPN's direct-to-consumer service at no extra charge. You'll download the ESPN application on your mobile device or smart TV. There'll be a login screen that'll ask you if you're a paid TV subscriber. Then you'll be able to authenticate, et cetera, et cetera. Once you authenticate, you'll get access to the new ESPN direct-to-consumer product with everything in it. That means starting in 2026, you'll get access to all WWE premium live events as well as everything else that's on ESPN. Monday Night Football, NBA games. You won't get NFL Network yet, which they also just bought this week in addition to Red Zone. That deal needs to close first, but once it does, the NFL Network and the games that air on it will be integrated into it also. The WWE live events won't be available on ESPN Plus. You'll need to upgrade to the $29.99 a month ESPN product, which is just the base ESPN product. But again, just to be clear, if you're a cable subscriber that gets ESPN, it won't be like UFC. You'll get it at no extra charge. And that's the last line here. And ESPN will not charge an additional fee for the live events. No return to pay-per-view here like ESPN has done with some UFC events on ESPN Plus. Now, for the analysis. Chris, you remember when we had it all and it was on a network called the WWE Network and we now don't need three different services to watch
ESPN? Yeah, right. As a consumer, This sucks. As a shareholder from April to now, you've seen your shares go from $75 a share to nearly $175 a share here. You know, you can't complain about that, but boy, I'll tell you, I'm glad they're making money because it will make my desire to consume all of this on one website in a one-stop shop much more moral quandary free, because I know everyone's getting paid at the end of the day.
Didn't we almost have it all? I think,
no, I captured the WWE Network. It wasn't perfect, but my God, all we wanted was for Raw
archives
and all that stuff. Yeah, archives and for Raw and stuff to be simulcasted on the network too.
Yes, I mean, this is all we needed. And instead, look, I understand getting paid. It's great. It's interesting because I only want Peacock now for that one NFL game they get every year, or two NFL games they get. I'm not interested in the footy or the other movies or TV shows they have on Peacock. I'm one of those people that I don't give a crap about The Office or Friends, so I don't want that. I think what's most interesting here is that Netflix did make an offer, but it was slightly less than a billion total, I think, for the same number of years. And I think Netflix is starting to have buyer's remorse about live events.
Interesting.
They had the Mike Tyson fight, and that was, you know, a car crash. And they have a couple other things. Oh, you know who can get all their WWE content in one place, by the way, Chris? If you so choose to do that, and I don't recommend you do, because I'm saying that I would not want to do this. If any law enforcement is listening, if you get a VPN, international PLEs and whatnot are all still on Netflix. You can have it at one-stop shopping if you just are an international viewer of Netflix, where SmackDown resides for them and Raw resides for them and the PLEs reside for them. It's just the Americans, us dirty capitalists that have to deal with all this.
No, you do. There are moments, not to get into meta-sociological, but like recently I have had moments where I've been reminded of like college classes and like capitalist critiques where, you know, one of the problems of the capitalist system is drowning in choice, where you'll have so many different options of like Bluetooth speakers or streaming services and everything like that. And you'll just be paralyzed with by how many choices there are. And yet none of them will be meaningfully better than the others. And I definitely feels like that, especially with these streaming services, where
Ezra Klein would say, we have an abundance of streaming options, don't we?
Yeah, right. No, I mean, that's, you know, like the flip side of abundance, right, is you could actually have a lot of like mediocre products that are all mediocre in different ways, right?
Netflix, like, yeah, like, Netflix is looking at like Korean television.
I definitely remember like the mid in the last decade, like 10 years ago, where Netflix was, you know, trying to fill out their crappy library at that point, which is crappy Indian programs that no one here in America wanted to watch because they were all made like in a B movie lot. They looked like they were directed by Wiseau's production company.
All of those Netflix documentaries where 3/4 or 2/3 of the way through it's like, you know what happened here? Then they introduced this plot device. Well, maybe the government was behind the assassination of Sam Cooke. It's like, no. Sam Cooke liked women. And a woman.
Yeah, no, like this is the flip side of abundance. It's like, what? Perhaps maybe a critique of abundance is just like a concept, is that once you get a lot of stuff, it sort of lowers the bar of quality. You start going, well, we got a shitload of strawberries. Doesn't matter if they're all really good because we have so many strawberries, or we have so many apples. Why do we need to worry about making good apples? Because we have a ton of apples. everyone's eating, right? We have a ton of strawberries. Doesn't matter that some of them are rotten. Everyone's eating, right? And I feel like it's like that with, like, you know, TV things. Why make a really good television streaming service when you could have 10? And between them, if you just paid for all 10 of them, you would have it all.
I am in my physical media hoarding phase because streaming services won't won't keep.
No, I'm in that build your own library. Both
used DVDs are cheap, yeah, baby.
That is also true. Like, I mean, just one last sidebar on this. Earlier this year, I got into this show, The Joe Schmo Show, and I like it. I'm going to want to rewatch it again. And a lot of the stuff that when I was watching it online, you know, it's all like 380p or 480, you know, 480p crappy, right? Mm-hmm. I decided to just hop on Amazon, and I got copies of both, like the first season and the second season from 20 years ago. And each of them was like $6. For me, if you really think about the convenience and everything like that, if I want to rewatch it at some point, it's going to be nice to just have it all there, not have to fish it up and have it all at perfect, you know, resolution. I think there's something to be said for that.
Are you getting Joe Schmo in Blu-ray or 4K?
No, but hell, Jeff, they didn't have the budget to put Joe Schmo on Blu-ray and 4K. I mean, like they had like limited pressings of the season 2 in particular. I like looked it up. I was like, damn, I was able to get a copy of this, and there's not actually that many copies of season 2 pinging around.
Is season 2 this latest season that just came out?
No, these are the ones from 20 years ago. Season 2 is the one where the female contestant, they had two contestants. The female contestant.
Oh, that's the one. Is that the one where my friend breaks, Paul Valancourt's on it as a prisoner or whatever?
No, that's season 3, which that's is season hilarious. Three? Yeah, okay. Season 3 is excellent. I think season 3 is funny as hell. But no, season 2, the female contestant actually breaks the game. She realizes that. And they pay her to become part of the ruse, which actually ends up making kind of a magic season of television, even if it's a broken show.
In this latest season, it has a wrestling connection because Chad Damiani, who's a friend of mine, he's out here doing a lot of clown and improv work, is a producer and actor on one of the shows. And he used to be.
I like the new one. I like.
He used to be the guy behind WCW Live broadcasts on the internet, where you were like. I think those were on AOL or CompuServe, where they would broadcast events like house show type things. Mm. So he used to work for WCW quite a bit. So shout out to my buddy Chad. Speaking of gross capitalism, Brock Lesnar's back. How's that for a segue?
Boy, I mean, we couldn't have teed up this next segment any better, could we?
Paul Levesque attempted to deflect by putting the heat on John Cena, using the fact that Cena is very popular right now on his way out as a defense of the move, claiming he was brought back because Cena wanted to work with him. Jeff Hawkins editorial, that's exactly the reason why Brock Lesnar was brought back. Quote, this is John Cena's wish list. John Cena's, it's him writing the last chapter of his book. And I think people saw a conversation with us where he said we'd have to screw it up pretty badly to ruin his career, said Levesque after SummerSlam. But it's not about that for me. It's about John being able to go out the way he wants to go out to write his chapter. I know what that's like as a performer. I know what that's like for everybody to feel that. And I think for John to be able to do what he wants to do. One of the very first things I said to him, who do you want and how? And we're working through that. WWE then somewhat changed their story on Raw, with Michael Cole saying that Nick Khan and Triple H had called Lesnar saying it's time to come home, and Lesnar said, let's do it. Cena certainly didn't confirm it either, saying to Adam Glenn, quote, I've been saying the same thing for 25 years. They deal them, I play them, you know, I'm just really excited. We got like 12 of these things left. I think SummerSlam was an indication from the audience where everybody kind of knows where we're closing our book. And just because I closed my book in December, that doesn't mean the WWE closes its books. They got to continue their programming going forward. So they're just trying to make the most exciting shows for the fans. A dozen of them I got left. They deal them, I play them. Levesque later said to ESPN, we hit him up and said time to come home, and he was into it. A massive moment for our fans, something they thought they wouldn't get to see. All right, so how do we approach this? Let me editorialize a bit first. I think everybody's takes on this are essentially somewhat correct. I think the women who are very offended by this have a right to be. I think Lance Storm saying, well, you know, you have to think about the women's division and how Triple H has changed it from Vince doing bra and panty matches and having people make out. And now to see this as a message, I think it's overly correct. I think Brock Lesnar, he didn't do anything illegal, but he certainly wasn't saying, no, no, Vince, don't text me these things or set me up with your girlfriend. Wasn't rejecting that.
I mean, he has not been convicted of anything.
That doesn't mean he didn't do anything wrong.
No, no, I'm saying specifically, if we're looking at the Janelle Grant allegations, I actually think some of the acts that Brock was involved with would fall under illegal acts or, you know, part of the sex trafficking stuff. So, like, no. We don't know that he didn't do anything.
Exactly.
Illegal. He has never been convicted in a court of law. And if you're like one of these chumps in the year of our Lord 2025, who's still living under that as your understanding of morality. Okay, great. I can't help you. I hope you buy a clue down at the corner store in the clearance aisle someday. But for the rest of us, I think actually Brock Lesnar probably did do some very nasty, very illegal stuff and has not faced repercussions for that. And that's the uneasy part.
Raj Geary and Jimmy Van of Fightful stepped in it a bit by stating this as fact without whatever. And it's one of those things you don't need to talk about. You can have that opinion and you don't need to put it out there publicly. And they got thoroughly sussed.
Wait, what opinion?
Well, they basically said, you know, Raj was a little bit harsher than Jimmy, in my opinion, but Raj says, you know, Janelle Grant cleared him of anything illegal in her.
She really didn't. Yeah. She really didn't though. I mean, if you're going through
basically saying that Brock was not named in the suit or was cleared of the suit is basically the cliff notes. I don't want to get people in my mentions.
No, the same thing as leaving him unnamed is not the same thing as exoneration.
Correct.
Right. Like they chose the folk in the deposition, which you and I read and discussed and we still have some
problems with Janelle Grant's version of things too, as well.
Right. But like, you know, as we said then, and you and I read a lot of stuff. It's one of the most troubling depositions that I have ever read in my life. And let's assume at absolute minimum, 25% of it's true, 30% of it's true. And I think it's more than that to be absolutely clear here. It's horrifying. And that would be, again, using that same percentage around Brock Lesnar. If I'm using that percentage, he's still involved in some heinous acts. He's just unnamed in the deposition and was never convicted in a court of law. Like, again, you know, that's just simply not the end all be all of how I understand morality at this point, but maybe I'm a little jaded.
Let me attack what this isn't, which I also saw on Twitter. This is not WWE's desperate because they've been creatively flailing and they're afraid of AEW's having a really hot streak with All In.
Stocks nearly doubled up since April. That's such an easy rebuttal. But I do want to say my piece.
Look, okay, go ahead. I was going to explain why this happened though. Can you give me that?
Go for it. No, I got my piece written down.
The answer to this is John Cena needs a star to go out on, and Brock Lesnar is the only big one left because Dwayne has thoroughly screwed up this entire John Cena heel turn in some ways. And Dwayne, while still technically a heel within story, I think he thinks that this final boss thing is also a redemption arc for him in some ways. So he's not going to lay down for John Cena in any way, shape, or form, I don't think. So we needed somebody, and there's nobody on the current roster at that level. He's already fought Cody, who is the biggest draw on the roster, possibly other than Roman. And Roman's in the middle of a babyface turn as well. The answer here is John Cena wanted it, and they found a way to do this. And I understand the knee-jerk reaction of trying to protect John Cena on his way out from saying this, because he still Peacemaker 2 comes out, or the season 2 comes out later this month. He still has a very lucrative Hollywood career, and John Cena has, in the past, especially when talking about China money in his projects and whatnot, he is a empty vessel when it comes to, hey, look, I'm paid to show up, I do my job, I go home, I leave. I'm not thinking about the morality of things.
Yeah, and that's honestly, I'm glad you left it right there, because that's a great place okay. for me to pick up. Dude's a morally gray guy. And so John Cena deciding that he wants to do this because Brock Lesnar was one of his best opponents in his career, and one of his best matches in his career was the Brock Lesnar squash match. And, John Cena's one of these, chumps who goes, well, Brock was never convicted of anything in a court of law. Like, he actually believes that shit. Like, all right. Yeah, for him, this morally gray guy who can speak out of both sides of his mouth when it comes to the morality of a government like China and everything else, and basically make all these sorts of morally gray calculations based on business, I'm not surprised by him. Now, for WWE, I am also not surprised, but I do want to take moral stock of where this company is coming out of this week, because, or out of the last, let's say, half month here, because I do think that it has been a blighting month for them. I mean, first, you go to the White House, which at the time, and still is, it embroiled in a major scandal involving sex trafficking. The scandal that said that hangs over the White House right now, and for those of you who have not Googled Jeffrey Epstein, let me tell you, you have an interesting afternoon on the Google this evening. But for the rest of us, yeah, we all know what's up with Epstein. And so they're visiting the White House during the middle of this giant sex trafficking scandal. That includes minors, no less. And then they do this child fitness stuff with Lawrence Taylor, Triple H, not enough to just kind of come in there and be like, hey, we're part of this, do their thing and leave. Triple H goes further and makes White House videos for the White House, what you might call in a different country propaganda, where he's coming out doing his Triple H entrance. The timing and the optics of this, questionable at absolute best. Then they lionize Hulk Hogan over all of their television for over 20 plus minutes. Right? Like, it must have been at least 20 plus minutes of tribute for Hulk Hogan between SmackDown, NXT, and Raw, right? That's about right.
Yeah.
So. Then they bring back, then they decide in a very sort of out of character move for WWE, which has been political in the past, but historically is not proud, is not quick to highlight their political moments too frequently. They decide that this is the week that they are going to highlight an association with a president. And that president just so happens to be involved in that aforementioned giant sex trafficking scandal that's going on. And then the cherry on top of all of this coming out of SummerSlam is we bring back Brock Lesnar, who, yes, had never been convicted of anything in a court of law, but like the very crux of everything that we understand about Vince McMahon, why Vince McMahon is not there and everything else centers around, drum roll, please, sex trafficking. Like, this is such a morally blighting look for this company, because it's day after day, step after step, action after action, showing at best a John Cena-like moral indifference for a problem that very much plagues our time, apparently, to my absolute chagrin as I'm cycling into middle age, which is rampant rape culture. So like WWE choosing to put themselves into, let's call it rape boy summer here mode, not hot girl summer, but good rape Lord. Boy summer. It makes you uneasy. Makes you uneasy to look at it in the mirror. That revulsion you're feeling is Caliban looking himself in the looking glass at the end of that play, realizing he's a mutant. This is where we are, dude. Sucks.
am I supposed to respond to that? I don't know what
you're
to
supposed
say.
To defend everything I just laid out here.
Oh, okay. Am I?
No, Jeff, it's like I'm old. I'm tired. And it's like every single one
and
of these headlines.
You work with children?
No, I'm governed by them. I feel like my society is managed by them. Right? I feel like these man children with billions of dollars just run rampant. Actually, to this point, I'm reading an excerpt from Marcus Aurelius last night. And okay. Marcus Aurelius, in book one, talks about wisdom that he's picked up from different people throughout the years. And one of them that I really dug, just to paraphrase and not to like pull it out and everything, was from one of my friends, one of my childhood friends. He taught me that our elders have this problem of patricians, which is they just don't quite feel like normal people. And I really feel that when it comes to John Cena, Triple H, Vince McMahon, a litany of other people that we see across society and culture. They just don't seem to feel the way the rest of us, I hope, generally do.
I totally get that. And I fully support it. I'm just sitting here going, who was a good person who was a wrestler when I was growing up? And I can't think of many. That's the thing. It's the entire business. It's the entire business is like this. So it's one of these things where people are angry and they think that there's a good company out there or whatever. I kind of go, no.
There are good
people within this business. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying everybody's a scumbag. I am not. I'm just saying it's rare.
This is not, I want the good company or whatever. To be clear, like my lament is like,
no, I know that.
Don't you just want something more out of this life at a certain point? Yes. Don't you just like open up the computer, open up the newspaper and go like, I just want to see us be better than this, damn it.
Yeah, I do. And then I'll watch old wrestling. I'll go, oh, here's the money launderer versus the guy who hit on 14-year-old ring rats. And you're just like, why do I still watch this at times? I'm kind of there occasionally because I still enjoy wrestling as a product sometimes, but it's also just one of those things where it's now started to build and build and build. And I'm just like, okay, you know, I've not condoned, but you know, I'll still turn on a Chris Benoit match occasionally, and then like 10 minutes into it, I'll go, "Oh yeah, he's a murderer," and then I'll have to shut it off.
You know what it is? It's not that I'm trying to deny the old chapter of the book. Like you and I, Vader Club is built around watching a lot of these degenerates beat the shit out of each other, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I want the chapter to end though, and when Vince McMahon left the company, it felt like we were actually putting an end to that chapter. And this, and my frustration here, my exasperation here, and my need to actually write this out and really put it in everyone's face and make them feel uncomfortable about it, is like, dude, the chapter should be over. The issue is not, if you look through, you know, like, oh, we have failed. If we have one bad chapter, we fail as a species. The issue is that we haven't ended the chapter, and we should be ashamed of that.
No, but I also feel the same way about watching Kirk Douglas movies. Google his past if you want to take a look at something fairly dark that he got away with. Where do I go here? Oh, something that was in my craw.
Do you want to do the Cena face turn too? I mean, we could pivot into that.
We could pivot into that.
No, but go where you want to go. We can swing back.
Actually, you know what? Let's do it right now because, I mean, this is all going to be like, the rest is just kind of like not really news, but rumor and innuendo and stuff. So it goes kind of in the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Anywho.
So part of what makes,
I was going to say the John Cena turn.
Part of what cheeses me. Yeah, it died. It's like the fact that his heel turn has been so lame and now we're going back into his face mode and this is how we're getting there is also part of what pisses me off about all of this. He's had a really lousy run here. And the heel turn was supposed to be this really important chapter in his career because he never went heel. So even if it was a short 6 month heel run, it would have been a really memorable chapter. It should have been a really memorable chapter. And instead, frankly, it's been kind of his flop era.
Well, let me give some context. On last week's SmackDown, where we recorded during the SmackDown, I believe, Cena and Cody had beers before their pretty good match on SummerSlam, shaking hands, and this wasn't the I've made a mistake. This is not the real John Cena. And, you know, then Cody comes out and forgives him, and then they have a street fight. This entire heel run failed because nobody wanted to go all in on it. John Cena didn't want to go all in on going against having new merchandise in every effing city, changing his theme song, changing his gear, doing what would be necessary to turn on the fans. He never wanted to turn on the fans. He did it because it was pitched to him, because Cody didn't want to do it, because it was a bad idea to turn Cody heel. And I tend to think The Rock pitched it to then be able to get over as a babyface when he pinned Cody. That's what I think. And then The Rock wanting a corporate champion and then bailing on this when Travis Scott became problematic in his own right. And then not wanting to participate in WrestleMania, not wanting to participate in SummerSlam, et cetera, et cetera.
Man, the Travis Scott stuff has been completely memory hold.
Yeah, no, Paul Heyman said this on an interview with Ariel Helwani. It's like, well, Travis Scott, that fell apart, so we moved on. Okay, but when you move on, you need to make stories make sense. It's something I tell about AEW that gets
right,
people
right,
on
yeah,
me all
to be
the
completely
time.
Consistent, right? Yeah, like this to
and
me is the
Cena
same problem.
Cena tried to do that, but he never really did. He said, the people who set me up for this failed me. I'm just like, that's not enough, dude. It has to be a major plot point. Yes.
You have a mic. These promos could have crushed it. And like, I refuse to believe that John Cena heel merchandise wouldn't have sold like hotcakes, especially if it was like John Cena hates this city. Like, you know, like just especially if he only made 15, 20 cities as a heel, having a John Cena hates Vancouver shirt would actually be, you know, like a valuable piece of merchandise that people would want.
It is single-handedly the biggest burning of money since I've been doing this show. The only thing that was even remotely close was not bringing up Bayley and pushing her as a female John Cena when she was at her hottest about a decade ago. Because that would have gotten a generation of young female fans. And it did, but not to the levels you would think. Because there were a bunch of 30 and 40-year-old neckbeards and people behind the scenes who were like, ugh, that side ponytail, she's playing a teenager and she's going to age out of that role soon, blah, 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 without understanding that this was a marketing cash machine that you guys had handed to you. Where even the Levesques, when they were still happily married, quote unquote, were saying, our daughters just want a lot of Bayley merchandise, and they're doing the side ponytail, and they're acting like her, and they're doing the wacky, wavy, inflatable tube guy stuff. And it's just this Cena heel turn. It was Hogan in the NWO without everybody going fully in on it, but at the same time with Cena and Hogan both not understanding what was driving the popularity of it. That's what
people want out of a heel character. Yeah, what people desire to hate out of this heel character.
We wanted to see John Cena sink his teeth into this heel character. And instead he became Robot John Cena. I feel nothing. I am dead inside. And he became emo Adam Page in a way.
I wanted him to be basically delighting in his five moves of doom.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like it's not a bug. It's a feature to him
where
like,
you know, he does a five, and then he pulls up short and he goes, nope, I'm not doing that for you guys anymore.
Or he does the, you know, power bomb, the back body drop power bomb move.
Right.
Power
right.
bomb move. Gets up and he's just like, man, five stars, Dave, five stars. Yes. Yeah. Good.
How's that for work rate, everybody?
Yeah.
That's a little too meta for me, but I understand it and it'd be fun.
No, I mean, him calling his own matches, he grabs a microphone. I mean, he should have had exhibition squash matches where he's, you know, he taking the Undertaker, come out and prove yourself, kid, sort of thing, and like totally inverting it where he's just embarrassing a local talent each week.
Yes.
In the
yeah,
ring.
That would have been fun. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really disappointing because there's this whole other side of John Cena we've never got to see him do, except in little flashes, and mostly it's that Bray Wyatt, Bray's Funhouse, you know, the Firefly Funhouse match where we get to see kind of what some of that characterization would look like, but we didn't get any of it. And now I'm left as we are wrapping up his career, because it's, you know, coming very quickly to the finish line here, going, well, did he have that? You know, he never gave it to us. And this, you know, you were able to explain that away in your assessment of, well, he has one job and he does that one job, and that's the job that he needs to do, and that's what the company needs out of him. That's why he does that job. So cogent and solid argument. But here he had another job and didn't do the job. So now, like, when I'm taking stock of his career, for me, it's a gentleman's three career. I appreciate what he did as a babyface. I appreciate the make-a-wish stuff. I appreciate the ability for this company to get through a wrestling kind of slump period, if you will, between the aughts and the network. I mean, like, that was a down era. Like, you know, now they're kind of back up. I think TKO after this merger and everything's kind of riding high, but they really troughed out by 2010. And John Cena's the guy who helped get them through and be like the stabilizing force through all of that. But he really only could play one side of the equation. It just clearly didn't deliver on the other side.
Your thoughts brought up something I was thinking about here. In that all these WWE icons, in terms of the guy that they put as basically the masthead, haven't been able to go out the way they wanted to in any way, when you think about it hard. Hogan came back to booze. Austin had, you know, the Kevin Owens street fight at Mania was pretty good. But he never really had that closure of that last great match that he could walk out on. Bret, of course, you know, retired out. He retired. The Rock, it's still not been written, really, because he keeps coming back. And he had that, you know, he was in the tag match last year. Ric Flair kind of got it with the Shawn Michaels retirement, but then he came back for the terrible cash grab on pay-per-view with Jarrett and Jay Lethal and whatever. Undertaker sort of
hey,
did.
I think that heart attack spot was a great piece of business, Jeff.
Jesus. Undertaker sort of did with that last cinematic match with AJ Styles, but I don't know how well that's going to be remembered. But it's one of these things where we never stick the landing on wrestling retirements, do we? Because everybody thinks that they can go out on one last big hoorah, and it's like not with a bang, but with a whimper in so many cases.
Yeah, I mean, everyone in wrestling has a problem when they get out of wrestling, especially for those first 5-6 years out of wrestling, that their body's still pretty physically fit, and they also don't really have anything else that's going to pay as well as wrestling, and that they really like to do as much as wrestling. And so most of them don't find a thing like Rick Martel we talked about, where he got into real estate and, you know, had like a thing that he was, right. And, you know, that was worked out great for him. He just never looked back, you know. Rick, what, why don't we ever see Rick Martel? Cause he doesn't need to, It would be a thing he'd only do if he wanted to, and he doesn't need to, and he doesn't want to, so he doesn't, except in small little stints and spurts. And when he does, he looks pretty good still for his age. I think a lot of these guys, they just get stuck in that first 5 years out of wrestling where you have to really reset your life. And it's also for a lot of these people, the first time that they've ever had to reset their life and that, you know, what that looks like. And everyone will go through this at some point. A real life reset probably takes a couple few years. You know, you want to turn the book on the old chapter, settle into the new chapter, move someplace else, do something else. I'm doing that right now. It's a few year process.
And you got to make a clean break, not the, oh, I'm going to go to Hollywood and be in movies and TV. That's still show business. You're still getting that adrenaline rush of being in the public eye and stuff. You have to go, I'm going to go be an accountant and I'm going
to
be the best.
If you move away from Dallas, you can't go back to Dallas. No. Right. If you're going back to Dallas once a month, you haven't really let yourself leave.
I am going to skip. I had MVP getting heat backstage rumors because I talked a lot about that on the Dynamite show. I might bring it up in the Lazy River to see your thoughts on it. But and I'm also Nick Khan said something, you know, big lawyer Vince McMahon-esque that really stuck in my craw about people who complain that they're tired and busy and that you should be up at 3 a.m. asking to help people if somebody asks you, which is just stupid. It's such lawyer thinking. It's like if you call them while they're on vacation at 3 a.m, they're going to chew you out. But I have to be it's that crap, which I hate.
So no, it's also like salary man crap too, yes, right? Like yes. That is absolutely like salary brain shit, because like if you're someone who gets paid by the task or someone who gets paid by the hour, you're sitting there going like, not unless you're putting me on the clock or not unless you're cutting me a check for the task.
Mm-hmm. So let me get the injuries and we'll get to the week of wrestling. Jonathan Gresham suffered 2 strokes this past week. He said that on August 5th, he woke up and wasn't able to walk, see, move the left side of his body and could barely talk. It took me 30 minutes to dial 911, but I finally did. I believe it was 8-5 Tuesday, so Jordan Grace wasn't around. She was at NXT. But when I finally did, I woke up in the hospital. I couldn't remember what had happened. They told me they had done an MRI and I had 2 strokes. I've had a lot of tests run, but everything has come back clean. They're not sure what happened, and the only thing they said was it could have been a possible complication from a bad case of COVID I had a couple weeks ago. They said we may never know the exact reason. Also on the injury.
Well, no, I think that that's actually, he's right. They may never know. Strokes can be mysterious like that, but seems to be consistent with a lot of like what we now have a better understanding of, like the nature of the COVID virus, the offset of Spanish flu, which is that it's, while it manifests in some ways like a cold or whatever, really there's a lot of blood clotting, blood components to COVID-19 and how it affects our blood. That seems to be really uniquely different. A lot of that does seem to be, And clotting and these sorts of things do seem to be consistent with that.
And then if you watched Collision last week, the finish of the Dustin Rhodes Kyle Fletcher bloodbath with all the chair shots to the knee was an injury cover. He is going to go out and have double knee replacement. Dustin Rhodes, sorry. Yeah, so he was expecting to have take time off for surgery. Then he found out the damage was so bad it couldn't be fixed by surgery and be getting a double knee replacement on August 21st. Like if Dustin went out being the TNT champ at All In and then having what was a pretty good but absolutely unnecessary bunkhouse match at that Collision with Kyle Fletcher, and you know it was pretty good, but it's just like one of those things where it's like AEW needs the gore just for the pay-per-views or an angle that's very, very important. Doing it on the week like Jon Moxley likes to do occasionally, it makes it lose its effectiveness. But man, that's the last we've seen of Dustin Rhodes.
Oh no, I think he's done. I'd do double knee replacement. Yeah, if he comes back it's going to be in a nostalgia one-time tag match capacity where he's the hot, not like
he, where he's the hot done. Tag and he gets like a code red or something. And that's it.
Yeah. No, but like he done, he done. That's a double knee replacement.
Hell of a career though. I mean,
hell of a career. I mean, God love him too. I'm chuckling over here just because I'm like, wait, he just got paid by Tony Khan too. So now Tony Khan's going to have to pay him out for the rest of that contract, which is like, I think a 4 or 5 year deal, which was a stupid length of time. Remember like, he got signed.
Paid.
Yeah. You know what? Get paid. He deserves it. But man, he's about to get paid. Tony Khan's like looking at that going, damn, didn't I just ink him to like a multi-year deal?
Yeah.
Dude, that was smart.
We call that the Maria Kanellis move.
Yeah.
So Lazy River. We'll start with ice cold takes on SummerSlam and just meander from there. The great in there. I mean, look, there were two nights. There was really good stuff. The women's three-way I thought was really good. That six-way TLC match was insane. And was everything it was supposed to be. Cody Cena was a throwback to 15 years ago. And then I'll say it. Logan Paul was fantastic in that Jelly Roll match. Both on offense and selling for Jelly Roll.
Yeah.
He was great. That dive onto the table, fantastic. I love this Drew McIntyre, Logan Paul team. I loved what they did on last night on SmackDown against Cody and Cena. I think they are such a fun, dynamic, smaller guy, but still badass, talks a lot of crap, and here comes Drew to be the cleanup. I adore those types of teams. And the cash-in. I liked Seth coming out, throwing away the crutches, coming in, beating the snot out of an absolutely weathered and defeated CM Punk. And don't get me wrong, CM Punk has obviously lost a step in his ability to work due to all these injuries, and the gray hair makes it look worse. He needs to get rid of that. But his look of absolute anguish when he hears Seth Rollins' music comes out is absolutely 5 stars. I loved it. It made the whole equal reaction of Seth being such a theater kid and throwing away the crutches and then just taking the briefcase and beating the snot out of CM Punk and then getting the pin. Fantastic. The bad Tiffany and Jade wasn't very good. Becky and Lyra. You want to talk about bad theater kid instincts. I'll get to another good theater kid instinct when we talk NXT, but Becky Lynch and her terrible theater kid instincts.
I don't want to blame the Irish for bad acting here.
Lyra
was
very good.
But I'm beginning to at least speculate.
Almost everything else was kind of mid. I mean, the cage match between Solo and Jacob Fatu was underwhelming. And, of course, then having a pretty good – I mean, the Cody Cena match was better than it had a right to be. And then ending it with Brock. When you had such excitement coming out of night one with the Seth cash-in, just felt like a giant fart in church to me, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, SummerSlam was a pretty weak SummerSlam to me overall. Like, there are some high water marks, and you've highlighted them. I like the Gunther Punk match. I am with you. Punk,
I liked it better. I liked it better than Brian Alvarez did, because Brian Alvarez.
Yeah, he just needs
Dave
to change
liked
his,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, he needs to change his style a little bit. You know, he just needs to get a little more ground based, more strikey, and that sort of thing, and not try to be a nostalgia CM Punk thing. It doesn't work for him.
Right, he needs to be old and grizzled, and he needs to do, you know, he can do his smacks, he can do his jujitsu he learned from UFC, but being the Randy Savage, running around ROH work rate guy that he used to be.
No, he shouldn't be that guy.
No.
He really shouldn't. I think Seth Rollins' cash-in, to me, is the big highlight of the weekend, and a masterstroke of business, arguably, this year, because they started this on All In weekend, and really it managed to steal a meaningful percentage of headlines away from the competition, by having the Seth Rollins injury angle. Is he, isn't he? You now have like John Pollock and Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez and Christopher Brito and Jeff Hawkins and everyone else debating the nature of Seth Rollins' injury instead of talking about All In. And I mean, if you just want to look at the podcast coming out, think about how many minutes on every one of those shows was dedicated to this angle and a debate of whether or not it was an angle or not. In this sense, I think it was a well-timed and very effective piece of business. In what has otherwise been a pretty ho-hum year for WWE's universe, which seems very lost post-Bloodline still.
If they had been able to move that TLC match to night one, I think we'd be speaking more highly of the two SummerSlams, because that TLC match was insane. And I have to give props to guys that I doubted for a little bit. Joe Gacy and Dexter Lumis are crazy people, and they fit right in. I mean, look, Candice LeRae is insane. We know that. She'll do hardcore stuff. Ray Phoenix did crazy. Angelo Dawkins did a Spanish fly with Axiom through a table off the top rope to the floor. But Gacy and Lumis were out there to be nut job old 1996 ECW guys, where it's like the backdrop on the ladder. Oh, the Street Profits missed that on Joe Gacy. Let's bring Joe Gacy in and he'll do it again. Dexter Lumis did a leg drop onto Montez Ford from the top rope through a table on the outside. That thing. And I don't think anybody came out with major injuries in it. It was insane, Chris. And everybody, I mean, it was double the TLC post-WrestleMania, and it served everything I wanted. And then, unfortunately, they then take the Motor City Machine Guns and they job them to Tala Tonga on SmackDown on Friday. But overall, I mean, there were fun parts in that. And yeah, I think Jelly Roll also had a hell of a night. Boy, I mean, he goes in there. It was such a perfect story, because he goes in there, he tags himself in and just gets his ass beat for 20 minutes and he can't get back to Randy. And then Randy comes in and gets beat up. But at the same time, Jelly Roll still getting housed. And then he makes the big comeback, but he still gets beat because Logan Paul's awesome and Drew McIntyre's a psychopath. You know, there were parts in that I really... Oh, and let not be said that Io Sky and Rhea Ripley just have amazeballs chemistry at this point, where you could throw anybody in there with them. I mean, Naomi had a good night, don't get me wrong, but just watching Io and Rhea now work, they could do these matches with their eyes closed.
And I think it'd
be amazing.
Backstage, it's just nice to see Io not have to do all these scenes with other native Japanese speakers where they're all trying to muddle through lines that are written in English. And so Now she has someone to play off of. And this makes it so much easier for the non-native speaker to be able to navigate their way through the scenes, where you at least have somebody who has a full comprehensive grasp of the lines they're trying to deliver.
Don't get me wrong, I love Hesher Mom Asuka and Muscle Hamster Kairi Sane, but it was getting a little old with the "we're Asian and we all like each other" type of thing.
Right, yeah. I still find Charlotte and Alexa to be an annoying like their dynamic is just
cringe.
They stink. I feel like Nikki Bella, it's the same thing. Like, the return of Charlotte and Nikki has been so unwelcome for me. They are just vacuums in terms of the speaking segments.
Let me fit myself in here, because I am mad at that Becky Lynch Nikki Bella segment. I think it look, Nick, again, I understand it got a big reaction. I have a problem with shaming women for their bad choices in men from years ago that they moved on from since, and using that as a wrestling plot device, even if it was in the business. I mean, nobody's shaming Becky Lynch for going out with Jeff Dye for years, who's a comedian in that segment. Well, but here she is going, oh, you and John Cena used to be an item. And I get it, used to be on the reality TV show, and I get that this all fits and she was probably okay with it. But she has had a troublesome marriage since. And I really just don't like putting that focus of quote-unquote shame on Nikki for her poor choices in dating. I guess.
Well, especially if they don't have the ability to actually, like, you know, if they have an arm tied behind their back with their response, right?
Yes.
So for me, it's like, oh no, that's fine. But like, you know, if I was just having some dispute where someone came up to me, it was like, hey, Chris, your ex-girlfriend's a crazy drunk. You know, I would be able to be like, yep. But if I was on WWE television and she works for the company, I can't say that. I had to, you know, like land somewhere on my feet, but not over there.
I'll get the rest of my women's notes for the week out of the way. Chelsea Green is fantastic. She was great on NXT, and she was fantastic on SmackDown last night.
Yep.
There's no irony to her mid-card comedy game. She still has some. You could heat her up and get her there. She has the goodwill of the crowd. The face
they're
plant
like ready
the,
to turn for her when they need her.
Yeah,
too.
The face plant in the cake, followed by the frosting lick by Charlotte, was fantastic stuff. She's just so good on this. And the other really good one was Ren Sinclair as the theater kid in the Joe Hendry segment where she's doing the over. Say his name and he appears. Yeah. I believe in Joe Hendry with a thumb to the chest thing. And then Hendry comes out of the refrigerator like out of a Gail Simone nightmare.
Ren
that was
and Charlie
stuff.
Are super cute together as yes. a comedy duo. Yeah, no, like I like them as an odd couple, like odd platonic couple comedy duo thing. It works super well. It's what I was kind of expecting. And yeah, the genes are there, obviously, on Regal's kid.
And then the bad is just, you know, Tatum, Thea, Sol Ruka, the women in the four-way in AEW. Instead of doing these convoluted set pieces, let's just teach them a little bit of grappling so that they're not doing gymnastics that look terrible all the time.
No, and don't sabotage the main event with Lash yes. Legend and the other one brawling around.
Naya.
Yeah, I see Lash, I tune out, and they just keep trying with this person over and over and over again. It's just, you
Peter
can
Griffin
raise
the
profile.
Peter Griffin
but,
and the Chicken has a limited shelf life with me because they do it for all these different other feuds. Yeah.
And that's actually kind of the only match that Flash really seems to be capable of having right now, which is the Peter Griffin and the Chicken fight around the block sort of match.
Yeah, I have talked a lot. Go where you would like in your last few minutes.
Yeah, no, outside of that, actually, I guess, you know, you basically hit everything I need in NXT. I'm so bored on this show on a regular basis. Although I did like Tatum and Sol Ruka's match before the run out. I think Tatum and Sol are both really talented. Sol still does a little too much gymnastics for your taste. I think she's tapering that back a little bit and her offense looks more like offense. I still see what you're saying. I just think that like she's getting better at looking more like, looking more like a match, but like the main event, men's picture, trapped in molasses. And then the rest of the women's division, same thing. Kalani Jordan, are we now unturning her? Great. Yeah, we're decharacterizing her now to get to this Blake Monroe match, which is boring. And Obafemi kind of is now just stuck in the, hey, I have a title sort of characterization. When I saw Trick Williams come back out this week to get himself back in the main event picture, I was like, damn it, no. No, no more. No more Trick Williams. I've seen every match that Trick Williams has right now. Send him away. Put him on excursion. Let me forget him. Like, bring him back at some point down the line. But, God, no more Trick Williams. I'm so done with Trick Williams.
You have a few minutes for AEW?
I do. I got a little bit for AEW. This is also a show that kind of seems narratively stuck in molasses for me. We're doing the same stuff with Don Callis and Kyle Fletcher again.
The painting was ridiculous.
The painting. I mean, the paintings are funny, sure. But like one, Kyle Fletcher is much less of a vehicle for a quick baby face turn than other people. Don Callis. I mean, Kyle Fletcher's just a naturally punchable face guy. You know, he's got a punchable voice. and a punchable face. Moxley, his character continues to still be lame to me. The Darby, the Death Riders stink. Like the Seth Rollins, Seth Riders are better than the Death Riders to me at this point. They've already run circles.
The shoe
them.
Gimmick is better than anything in the Death Riders.
Yes. Yes. It's better than anything they came up with in the, yeah, the Death Riders the whole time. And then I, you know, the rest of this like main event picture that MJF and everything and Adam Page, it's like, especially with MJF and his tendency to choose scenery and overstate himself, hit the Adam Cole title reign now seems to be centered around MJF, which is ridiculous to me. We have not even, not Adam Cole, Adam Page. We have not even really focused in on Adam Page sufficiently.
Correct.
We're already focusing on MJF.
It's the same thing that happened last time too. It's like make Adam Page your friggin' alpha and let him cut some championship level promos before you start undercutting him with the Seabiscuit stuff. It's ridiculous. May I go?
Outside of that, I mean, they're just not doing a whole lot new on this show than 4 weeks ago. Even the MJF, Mark Briscoe, Kosher Pickle, all that crap. I mean, you could see the episode from several weeks ago where we talked about that and how I think it's like lame and kind of gross that they chose to go this direction. And I you know, with Mark Briscoe, to me, it's too little too late. Like, for the time to heat this guy up and make him the sentimental fan favorite, the Sami Zayn of this company, was 2 years ago. And now you're doing it in half measures, mm-hmm. and you're doing it half-assedly.
My point of contention this week was the Young Bucks story. Because, yes, it would have been fun after All In. They're no longer EVPs, and they're going to hit rock bottom. The problem is they aren't doing that story. Because they got a clean win over the Outrunners last week. They're doing cutesy little ironic, which is the opposite of the Chelsea Green comedy, which is not self-aware. They're doing self-aware comedy with the Bucks and doing references to them in TNA and literal, ring intros. But here's where it gets even worse. Because you're trying to get over the makeshift team of Brodito to be this group that can eventually overcome the Hurt Syndicate. And so you're weakening the Bucks to make them be out of sorts while you're putting the other makeshift team over. And that's not the story you want to tell. You want the Bucks at their peak. Peak Bucks. And they've somehow damaged Brodito before the match. I mean, you could have done this. You could have had them, they've bottomed out backstage, and so they're very angry and vicious because they've been talking to Don Callis.
This week they're targeting a limb on one of the teams.
Impress him, and they've decided to try and break Bandito's arm before the match, and then they have to overcome that or whatever. But, them not knowing the name of their finishing move and them starting to argue, and that leads to Brodito winning this match, does nothing for Brodito and isn't all that damaging to the Bucks in this story and doesn't make their story more interesting. It's all backwards on here, and here's what's going to happen. Brodito's going to beat FTR and everybody's going to say everything's okay. And I'm here to tell you that doesn't make it so. And they'll probably beat the Hurt Syndicate because I think the Hurt Syndicate may be on their way out in November. But it goes against them. And also my other thing, which I should have started with because it's a much weaker point. This Don Callis thing. I loved the levels of suit game here with Kyle and Alexander being dressed to the nines. And, you know, the Lance Archer, you know, he's just a badass, so he's going to dress however he wants. Can we tell Echecero it's suit day as opposed to black long sleeve t-shirt day? The brother came out looking like Uno, and I thought it was evil Uno at first. But yeah, this Young Bucks story is an interesting story, but they're not telling the interesting story in it. Also,
it could be an interesting story, but like it's just non-committal storytelling. And now I find myself, you know, debating with myself or like a person in my head, you know, the person who's like, well, Chris, it doesn't really matter that they're not telling a cogent story, to me going, I don't know, man. Is it at a point where having a story that countervails against the match sufficiently is hurting the match that I'm watching on screen?
Yeah.
And I mean, I felt that with the Bandido or Brodito match. It's like, you know, if you're not committed to the story that needs to be told, this really is just kind of a lukewarm Young Bucks team taking an L to Brodito. If there's a clear and cogent story, it's actually an interesting, you know, meetup of one team going up and the other team going down.
And to your point, the entire MJF Adam Page story is about MJF.
Yes.
And his journey through getting thrown out of the Hurt Syndicate to prove that he is a worthy person who can hurt people. How does this help Adam Page at all as your new champion? I don't, it's one of these things. And of course, here comes Cope and Christian with their, they kind of fixed it a little bit by saying, yeah, Christian blew his promo last week, but here's Cope. And the way to stage that promo is, okay, he has a restraining order, but he's allowed to pick a member of FTR to fight against. Okay, I pick Stokely. And you get the pop from there, and then like Stokely's like, no, I'm not, you know, he's panicked and whatnot, as opposed to this thing, which kind of makes Cope look like a jerk is what it makes.
I know, right? No, it's just Stoke. I mean, look, Copeland, a wrestler, wanting to wrestle a non-wrestler, you know, I mean, it's like me saying I want to like have a match. Oh, I'll have a match. I'll have a match against Jeff Hawkins, the 11-year-old Jeffrey Hawkins from West Virginia, who I'm, you know, going to beat the crap out of. It's you have a match against someone who's clearly not in the same league.
I'll take anyone on this crowd, and I'm going to start with the 5-year-old right there.
No, Adam Copeland feels like Andy Kaufman wrestling women.
Yes, there you go. That's
you know, like it's that kind of energy here. You know, and obviously we know Stokes' injury is full of crap, but even if he's not actually leg injured, it's extraordinarily plausible that he's feigning that injury because he's scared. Because even if he was fully healthy, he's still 2/3 the size of Adam Copeland.
I got your out here, but I just want one more point. Is the Swerve Strickland promo is not the Swerve Strickland promo we need. I don't want the I respect you Okada thing. I want you to be mad and want to kick his ass and get some emotion in this.
There's that, and I just want these. I mean, it's the same theme I have for pretty much every one of these promos. Is dude, I following All In, we have just not done a very good job on this show of making this feel meaningfully different from what we were watching leading into All In.
Right, they're telling indictment. Yeah, they're telling stories with exposition and not how people feel about these feuds that they're going into. And it's like, okay, we're telling the next story to get to the next pay-per-view, blah, 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 blah.
The other company has just a much firmer grasp on this idea. Even if I don't love the Raw after WrestleMania every year, WWE has a much clearer, whether it was Vince or Hunter, we are ending things at Mania. And we are starting new things coming out of Mania. Now, you might not love Bloodline 2, but like at least they end the chapter and then they tell you we're going to finish the story.
And that doesn't exist for SummerSlam, guys. So stop trying to make Fetch happen with the Raw. This is the Raw after SummerSlam.
That was never a thing.
Let's get out of here.
No, the Raw after SummerSlam was the lead into Lazy Season historically.
Yes. But it was never a thing just because they're in New York. I mean, the beach balls and the international fans acting up and stuff like that was always the Raw after WrestleMania, where people had to control themselves. Yeah. But Yeah, we'll come back next week. I'll have a Vader Club pick, and we'll talk a little bit more wrestling because the news was heavy this week. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. I do a show on Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show. About 20 minutes after it goes off the air, myself and Figure Four's Paul Fontaine do a thorough deconstruction of that week's AEW. I do a thorough deconstruction of that rumor about MVP getting heat backstage and what it means for the Hurt Syndicate and the relationship with Speedball Bailey. So go listen there. It drops in your podcatchers for free on the next morning. Chris has the only social media he has is the gram at Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. I'm going to let him do his other plugs right now.
Yeah. Got an album that I'm hoping for release. Looks like I'm hitting a snafu. I have to read up with this, the producer.
Oh, no.
Sometimes life happens in the producer's life. So I might have to find a new producer. I'll figure it out. It looks like I have some more things to figure out on the album front, but it's actually done. Go and subscribe on iTunes if you want to hear some early demos of it. The final version of this, the longer it takes, all I can say is final version of this is going to sound way better than those early demos, with different remastering and everything. Very proud of the album. It's called Inversions. Subscribe on Spotify. Chris Novembrino is my name-o there. If you want guitar lessons, please hit me up. Which I'm actually about to zip, zop, and zoop off to now.
See you next week, kids.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns on individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.